I get the sense that we are entering a new chapter, a new era in the whole issue of abortion. And it's coming in the form of, well, I guess you could call it a chemical abortion, but it's all in the form of a pill. We've all heard about RU486, but there's also this morning after pill or this emergency contraception called Plan B. And if you were looking at the St. Louis Post-Dispatch, you saw under the public health section a commentary, FDA action will harm women's health. We're going to be talking about that commentary in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch with Dr. Gene Rudd here in the first 25 minutes of Issues Etc. today. I'm Todd Wilkin. After our conversation with Dr. Rudd, we're going to spend about an hour going over the audio from Thursday's interview with Pastor Greg Laurie. We had a very interesting conversation with him. He, of course, is probably most famous for his Harvest Crusades that he holds internationally, and then Harvest Greg Laurie. It's a television program he has, and he also has a nationally syndicated radio program and a new book, Winners and Losers and Winners, Saints and Sinners. We talked to him about the book on Thursday. I want to go back over that audio because we really didn't leave ourselves enough time to discuss it in detail, and there's some good things to be said about what Pastor Laurie had to say there, as well as some concerns, and we'll do that coming up in about 20 minutes here on Issues Etc. At 4:30, right at the midpoint of the program, Dr. Martin Nolan joins us to begin a series, part one of a five-part daily series, on the writings of Luther here during the Reformation month of October. We begin with the 95 Theses, simple little document that many believe gave birth to the Reformation. We'll find out what it was all about. Dr. Martin Nolan will join us from the Concordia Historical Institute here in Studio A for that hour-long conversation. And then, if you were watching, if you were up early watching, CBS Early Show on Friday, you might have seen a short interview between its host and Joel Osteen. Some very interesting questions asked in that short interview. We'll play the interview for you and have a bit of comment on it as well. It's open lines in the last 45 minutes of Issues, etc. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Coming up in just 13 days, and the time is quickly dwindling, we're going to be celebrating 10 years of Issues, etc., our nationally syndicated Sunday night program, starting with 5 affiliates 10 years ago. Now almost 100 affiliates nationwide. We'll be celebrating with a banquet here on the campus of Concordia Seminary in Clayton on Saturday, November the 5th. It's only 13 days away. We have some room left, but seating is limited. If you'd like to join us that evening to celebrate 10 years of Issues, etc., you can call Jenny Williams here at the station, 314-505-7836. The banquet is $50 a plate. I'm looking forward to meeting you there. We'll have many Issues, etc., regular guests on hand, and people are coming from all over the country to join in the celebration of 10 years of Issues, etc. Jenny's number again, 314-505-7836, or go to our website, issuesetc.org, for more information. And look for the picture of Dr. Larry Rast, who will be our keynote speaker that evening. Look for the picture of Dr. Larry Rast doing his thing. Click on that and you will find more information about the Issues, etc. 10th anniversary banquet coming up in 13 days, Saturday, November the 5th, here in St. Louis. Dr. Gene Rudd is a regular guest on the program. He's Associate Executive Director of the Christian Medical and Dental Association based in Bristol, Tennessee. And he joins us to talk about a commentary in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled FDA Action Will Harm Women's Health. Dr. Rudd, welcome back.
Thank you, Todd. Good to be with you.
Well, tell us what Plan B is first and give us a brief history of the FDA's action on this, I think it's called emergency contraceptive, before we get into reacting some of the things that Susan Wood wrote in the New England Journal of Medicine. It was reprinted in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch.
Sure. Plan B is a product that contains hormonal contraceptives. It's like the hormones that would be found in routine birth control pills, but it's a much higher concentration of it, and it's used only for a short period of time, and it's intended for use after unprotected intercourse to theoretically prevent, and I use that word, it needs a definition, needs a description, but theoretically to prevent a pregnancy. And the idea is that if someone has intercourse and they're subject to getting pregnant because of that, then we can take this product for up to 3, maybe even 5 days later, and it will stop that pregnancy from occurring. Of course, we know that pregnancies already occur in that period of time, so it doesn't just stop a pregnancy from occurring, it stops a pregnancy that has occurred. And that's an important point to talk here. But it has been available in various types of regimens for doctors since the 70s. Actually, they've not used it under the Plan B name, but they've used it under just taking some pills out of birth control pill packs and giving them to patients who, say, have shown up for a sexual assault. But now the product is available by prescription. But there has been a push on to get this product available over the counter so that any young woman can go in and get it without a prescription. The FDA has considered that. They said, well, you know, we don't have any safety studies on women under age 16, so they can, if it's available without a prescription, they can get it too. So we're going to delay any decision until we can figure out how to either prove the safety of the drug in young women or maybe market it prescription only for young women and over-the-counter for older women. And it's sort of a mess right now. And in the midst of that mess, Susan Wood decided to resign.
Now, she wrote an opinion piece in the New England Journal of Medicine. It was adapted for a commentary in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today titled FDA Action Will Harm Women's Health. And Susan Wood frames the issue as a choice between sound science and something less than sound science. Is that an accurate way of seeing the FDA's debate here?
It's really not. I think Ms. Wood probably is interested in the health of women. Unfortunately, she's recommending something that's not in the best interest of women. I think it starts by looking at how she begins her editorial by quoting from Thomas Huxley. Huxley was known as Darwin's bulldog. He was a scientist who was passionately a defender of Darwin and evolution, and someone who totally rejected a transcendent creator. And when you take that philosophy that Ms. Wood espouses at the beginning of this, that science can't be guided by creed, what that does is just opens the opportunity for us to have scientific abuses like we've had in the past. Science has to be guided by principle, lest we have repeats of the Nazi experience or the Tuskegee experiments, or we have more Frankenstein monsters being created. Science needs to be guided by principle. And she starts the beginning by saying she rejects that notion. And I don't. I think science, and I think the people listening to your show, believe that science needs to be guided by principle.
So when she says the decision, talking about the FDA's decision, which leaves women of all ages without appropriate and timely access to emergency contraception, when she says it's a clear rejection of the FDA's previous direction, and she makes a lot of that in the commentary, and that the right people weren't listened to, and this was kind of a decision that was just done without the appropriate channels. How do you react to that?
Well, if you look at the data that was presented to the FDA, it's far below the quality of data the FDA normally requires for approval of a product. They tried to get this product through on poor studies, very limited studies. Since the time that the FDA first looked at this, there has been additional studies that have come out, and there was a major study in the Journal of the American Medical Association in January of this year that looked at the whole premise. The whole premise has been we've got to get emergency contraceptive available in the marketplace, easy for women to use so that we reduce the number of abortions. Well, the JAMA article, Journal of American Medical Association, looked in a large study in San Francisco to see if that premise was true. They found it wasn't. Having it readily available so that women could just walk into the drugstore and pick it up, and that population of people who had it readily available, their frequency of abortion was no different than women who had to go get a prescription for it. So the underlying principle that this is going to somehow reduce unwanted pregnancies and reduce abortions is not founded. There's no data to support that. But yet that is the holy grail that people hold out as being the reason for having this readily available.
Has Plan B, this drug that's in question, been adequately tested? If it's going to appear over the counter, being sold to minor children perhaps, has it been adequately tested on those who might use it? And I'm thinking here about those minor children.
It has not been adequately tested, especially on women under age 16. And it has not been tested in people who might have an abuse potential for it. Now, when I say abuse potential, I'm not talking about overdosing by just taking too much at one time. But for those women who might say, well, I'm not going to go get any other type of protection, so therefore every time I have sexual intercourse, I'm going to go down and buy this product. And we don't have any clue what will happen in taking these high doses of hormone day after day or 3 days a week or 10 days out of a month. We have no clue about that. So there is that real risk that they could be taking far too much medication and having side effects, and we just don't know. So why would the FDA dare recommend this? There was an advisory committee that said it was okay. Well, there were not everybody on that advisory committee said it was okay, and I think there were some sound minds there that said, wait a minute, we don't have enough evidence, even scientifically, to say this. But, you know, there's a larger social issue behind all this. The number one reason that young women go to see a doctor is for contraceptive care, to get birth control pills. And it's at that doctor's visit where they have the chance to get the best care possible. Let's call it the A plan rather than plan B. And I think we as a society ought to advocate the A plan and not the B plan. And if we make this product available over the counter, those very women who are at high risk for unwanted pregnancies, at high risk for sexually transmitted diseases, will be bypassing the very system that has the best chance of helping them to avoid that. I just don't see it as a socially conscious, conscionable decision. It's not good public health care. It's not good for individuals. And there are other issues, too, but I think that one should trump any concern or any advocacy for having this available over the counter. It just takes women out of the system that can best take care of them.
Well, Susan Wood says that she just fundamentally disagrees with the 2004 decision of the FDA, and she said that the whole proposal, in her words, was not based on concerns about safety or efficacy. She implies that that should be the only concerns that the FDA should concern itself with.
Well, she's wrong about that. There are legitimate safety issues that were raised over and over, and the commissioner used those explanation as why we can't just make this readily available, especially to young women, because we have no knowledge that it's safe for them. So she's just speculating in order to promote her own agenda, her own biases here. There is no safety issue that says the safety data that says this is okay for young women. Now, will it have lots of risky side effects? Probably not. But we're just guessing at that. We don't have any data to prove that. Will it accomplish the goal in terms of a global public health desire of having reduced unwanted pregnancies and abortion? We've already seen that that's not the case. So what is she really advocating for? What she's really advocating for is sort of a radical autonomy here. I want my way, my day, my time, the way I want it. Don't give me any rules. You know, I just think that's exactly what she starts by saying, that science can't be guided by creed. We have to have principles to guide the science and to guide our public health policy. I don't want to be in a society that doesn't.
So, two final questions. Where does the whole debate go from here?
Well, the FDA has asked for input on how it could possibly achieve this goal of making a product available simultaneously over the counter to one group of citizens and prescription to another group of citizens. Now, I don't know how they're going to pull that off. I just don't know how they're going to pull it off. And I don't know if they have a clue how they're going to pull it off. Was it a stalling tactic, as Ms. Wood suggests? Maybe so, because it may be the commissioner and others up there say, you know, we're just not comfortable with this right now. And until we've got the data to say it's comfortable, let's keep asking questions. And that's where they're at right now. There was certainly no reason, I mean, other than championing her cause and not having it get a favorable response. There's no reason for her to quit her job over this. If she really wanted to advocate for women's health, she would have stayed right there and been part of that that process, but she didn't. And it's sad that she's really advocating something that's only going to be harmful to women. It's not preventing their abortions, and it's opening them to more risk.
Then finally, Dr. Rudd, will, at this point in the debate, will the FDA's action harm women's health?
Depends on what the action is, Todd, and I don't know what they're going to decide. It is a two-edged sword. Almost anything they decide will have risk and benefits simultaneously. We've got to, as scientists, look at those risk and benefits more than what happens to the individual. We have to look at it from a public health standpoint. And it's very clear that both for individuals who are not having their abortions, their unwanted pregnancies prevented, and therefore not reducing the unwanted, the abortion rate, and because there are safety concerns about individuals taking this much product unrestrictedly, I think we can't release this on the market. It's not a good plan.
CMDA.org is the website address for the Christian Medical and Dental Association, CMDA.org. Dr. Gene Rudd, thank you for being our guest.
You're welcome.
Dr. Rudd is Associate Executive Director of the Christian Medical and Dental Association based in Bristol, Tennessee. He joined us to talk about this commentary in today's St. Louis Post-Dispatch titled FDA Action Will Harm Women's Health. Coming up in, golly, this is really getting close, isn't it? November 11th, Friday, November the 11th, here in St. Louis, the premier bioethics conference. In fact, we talked recently with Dr. Voss on the program last week, and I think one of the things that he will be discussing in his little primer on bioethics in general is things like Plan B, an emergency contraceptive. If you are at all interested in the pro-life position and sharpening your skills and your knowledge on all of this whole panoply of issues that lies before the pro-life community, this is the conference for you. It's called the Image of God Bioethics Conference here in St. Louis, Friday, November the 11th. We're going to be broadcasting live from the conference itself, talking with some of the guests, and we hope to meet you there as well. For more information on the Image of God Bioethics Conference, you can find a logo at our homepage, issuesetc.org. It's going to be held at the Westport Lakeside Chalet here in St. Louis. And all the information you need is right there at our website, issuesetc.org. Look for the logo for the Image of God Bioethics Conference. Late last week, I think it was Thursday, we had a very interesting conversation with Pastor Greg Laurie. Now, you might have seen his new book if you've been through a Christian bookstore. And I think they're now, the way things are crossing over, you probably saw it if you've been into a Barnes & Noble or a Walden's Books or any other big chain store as well. It's called Losers and Winners, Saints and Sinners. Pastor Greg Laurie is pastor of one of the top 10 largest churches in America. It's Harvest Christian Fellowship in Southern California. He has a nationally syndicated radio program called A New Beginning and a television program called Harvest Greg Laurie. Some have compared him to Billy Graham because he holds international and yearly crusades called Harvest Crusade. And some have said that he will follow in Billy Graham's footsteps, or at the very least, if not the next Billy Graham, at least pick up the legacy where Billy Graham leaves off. Now, this is what we're going to do for the next hour. It's open lines, issues, etc. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. When we played this interview on Thursday and commented on it, we were doing it a little pressed for time. I want to hear from you on this as well. You've had some time to digest it. We're going to play the interview, kind of stop and start with some commentary. And one of the reasons is on Thursday, we didn't have an opportunity to really go into any detail some of the positive things that Greg Laurie had to say. Some of the things, when we were doing the interview, we're nodding our head. Yes, good, excellent, which is kind of unusual when we do these high-profile interviews. And then to critique what was said a little bit later in the interview as well. So I want to hear from you as well. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. I began our interview with Pastor Greg Laurie by asking him how his new book, Losers and Winners, Saints and Sinners, differs from the ever-popular Purpose-Driven Life by Pastor Rick Warren.
I haven't heard that comparison. Well, I would say that, you know, in one sense, they're similar, in another sense, they're quite different. My book is more about starting, running, and finishing the race of life well, where Rick is more about finding your purpose in life and following after that purpose. I suppose that once you've found your purpose, this is now how to see it through in the long haul, if you wanted to compare the two. But basically, I'm encouraging people to find the keys as given to us in Scripture on how to not only start this race, that the Bible often uses the metaphor of the Christian life being like a race, but how to run it long, how to run it strong, and how to complete what you've begun. Because over the years, I've just seen so many people who started off with such great potential fall away. And I've just wondered, what is it that we can do as believers to ensure our own success? Now, I'm not suggesting that this is something we do in our own strength or steam, but I am suggesting that the Bible gives us certain principles that we can apply that will better enable us to run well in the race of life.
Pastor Lori, you use the analogy of losers and winners. What makes a Christian a winner?
Well, when I'm defining winner, I'm talking about a person who completes what he has begun. I would say basically that the idea is that we're in a race, and Paul says, run to win. I'm not running to lose. So the objective here is to succeed in this endeavor, to succeed as a Christian, to cross that finish line and hear the Lord say, well done, good and faithful servant. You know, enter into the joy of your Lord. So I think that we need to get into this race and understand that this race has boundaries, this race has rules, this race has an objective. And for instance, the rules, the Bible says, you know, we're running in a race, but it warns us about being disqualified. So there are certain things that can trip us up, that can cause us to fail in this race. And then, of course, there are objectives, and those objectives are to please the Lord and to run this race well. So what I do is I look at various Bible characters from Genesis to Revelation and seek to find the losers and winners in the race of life. There are certain men that started off with great potential but crashed and burned, like King Saul or the Judge Samson. There are others that started well and then fell and got up again to run another day, people like King David or the Apostle Peter. Then there are some that started and finished very well, like Joseph or the Apostle Paul. So I think as you read through it, you will find yourself in one of these chapters and say, wow, that's me. You know, that's where I'm at right now. So wherever you're at in your Christian life, I think that you'll find something that will encourage you in this book.
Now, this is one of my concerns, breaking in here. One of my concerns is the direction that Pastor Lori's book takes on how to read Scripture. The Bible is a multifaceted book. It's complex. It's a long story. It has many different characters, many different people, many different genres of literature, many different